Chapter 3. Sieur Morel, I'd like a quick word with you if you can spare the time. I judged my movement precisely so that to the casual observer it would look as though we'd reached the door of the conference room together purely by chance. The grizzled miner turned in my direction, assessed the situation with keen intelligence, and nodded, dismissing his staff with a casual wave. They filed out along with the tech priests and the quill pushers, Ernulf and Pryke still simmering nicely, leaving us alone with Castine and Brocklaw. The Major had joined the conference shortly after Castine dropped her little bombshell, taking over the tactical debriefing at the refinery stall. Now the two of them were bundled together over data slates, refining their strategy for the defence of the plant. Ernulf, Pryke, and their respective hangers-on had turned out to be quite helpful after the sight of my sidearm had cleared the air, no doubt reflecting that the orcs might very well get them if they didn't do all they could to help, and if the greenies didn't, I most certainly would. A handful of troopers were bustling in and out of the conference suite, setting up map boards and a large urn of tanner leaf tea. It looked as though this was going to be our command post, at least for the time being. Castine claimed it was an excellent vantage point from which to direct the troops, but I suspected she just liked the view from the window. I found the gradual transformation from civilian decadence to the purposeful military atmosphere quietly reassuring. How the miner viewed it, I had no idea, or interest, come to that. "Of course. How can I help?" Morel asked. I poured myself a bowl of tanner tea and offered him one. After a moment he took it, sipped cautiously, and appeared to approve, although the Valhallan brew isn't to everyone's taste. "Earlier you mentioned some of your miners had disappeared in mysterious circumstances. Would you care to elaborate?" An expression of mild surprise crossed his grizzled features. I suppose after being stonewalled by the other factions here for so long, our interest was unexpected.
"5 people in just over a month. It might not sound much out of a workforce of 600, but believe me, it mattered to us."
He shrugged. "Of course, the Administratum and the Mechanicus don't give a damn. Just trot out the same old line about the losses being within acceptable statistical parameters."
"What's your opinion?" I asked.
Morel sipped his tea, formulating a response, and I forestalled him.
"I want your gut reaction. Don't feel you have to be polite."
He laughed and looked at me with renewed respect.
"Just as well. Diplomacy isn't exactly my strong point."
He sipped again. "Something's definitely wrong down there. Don't ask me what, though."
"Then we need to find out," I said. Castine broke off from her conversation with Brocklaw long enough to nod.
"Quite," she said. Brocklaw nodded too.
"Absolutely no point in fortifying the place if the trouble's already inside with us.
You think we've got orcs in the tunnels?"
Morel paled at the thought. Whatever he'd thought the problem might be, this clearly wasn't it. I shook my head doubtfully.
"It's possible, although sneaking around picking people off one at a time isn't exactly their style."
"And I don't see how they could have got here that soon," Castine added with a glance at the hemisphere map pinned to the wall close to her seat. "It's taken them over 6 weeks to get here from the crash site. If an advance party was taking your miners, they'd have had to got halfway around the planet within a few days of their arrival, and we've seen no sign of any rapid deployment capability."
"Unless they teleported," I suggested.
"It has been known."
1. Orc units were deployed by teleporter on several occasions during the Armageddon campaign, for instance.
"We're not jumping to conclusions, are we?" Brocklaw mused. "Could it just be an unfortunate series of accidents, after all?"
"That hardly seems likely."
Morel stared at the plan on the opposite wall. The straggling and meandering lines looked like nothing so much as a detailed diagram of a plateful of noodles. A map of the tunnels beneath us, I realised, where the precious veins of ice which could be transmuted into promethium had been hauled out for countless generations.
2. Only about 6, in actual fact. The processing plant on Simia Orichalcae was relatively new.
"Can you show us where the missing miners vanished from?" I asked. That might give us some kind of a clue.
Morel nodded, picking up a stylus from the desk and marked the points in rapidly. I realised he must have done this before, no doubt hoping to find some connection himself. I stared at the rumpled sheet of paper,
translating the lines in my mind into a three-dimensional image and trying to get a feel for the space.
1. As I've noted elsewhere, Cain had an uncanny affinity for the layout of underground passageways, probably as a result of his early upbringing on a hive world.
If there was a pattern to be discerned, however, it eluded me. Have you spotted something? Castine asked hopefully, aware of my tunnel rat's instincts from my reports on the Gravelax incident. I shook my head. There's no obvious connection between these points, I said. I tapped one with a fingernail. This gallery's a dead end, for instance. An assailant would have to get past an entire shift of workers unobserved. And that's just not possible, Morrell confirmed, which begged another question that Brocklaw was obliging enough to ask. Unless one of the refinery staff is responsible, he began, but trailed off as Morrell's face darkened. If you're planning to accuse any of my people of murder, you'd better have some damn good evidence. No one's accusing anyone of anything, I soothed, biting back the unspoken yet. You've brought a potentially serious security breach to our attention, and we're trying to get to the bottom of it, that's all. If it saves any more of my people, I'm glad to help, the miner said, somewhat mollified. I'm glad to hear it. I gazed at the map of the mine workings again, as though deep in thought. But I don't think we'll solve the problem talking about it over a bowl of tea. Then what do you suggest? Castine asked. I sighed with every appearance of reluctance and shook my head. I'll just have to go down there and take a look around, I said. Now, if you've been reading my memoirs with any degree of attention, it's probably struck you that this apparent willingness to put myself in harm's way is somewhat uncharacteristic, to say the least. But try to see things from my point of view. For one thing, if I hung around here while the defences were being prepared, there was a pretty good chance I'd end up in that bone-chilling cold again. And I was most reluctant to do so. Not to mention the fact that there was a horde of greenskins on the way. True, they weren't expected to arrive in force for another 24 hours or so, but that hadn't held back the advance party we'd encountered already. And who knew how many more of them might be lurking out there, waiting for an unwary target to show itself. Tunnels, on the other hand, were an environment I felt right at home in. I could match my fighting skills in a dark, confined space with anything we might find down there. And it wasn't as if I was going in alone either. Anything used to taking on solitary, unarmed civilians was in for a big surprise if it tried jumping a squad of troopers with lasguns. So, all in all, I was pretty confident that whatever might be lurking in the dark lower levels, it wouldn't pose nearly as much of a threat to my continued well-being as hanging around outside like a chunk of deep-frozen orc bait. In this assumption, I was, as it turned out, both quite correct and catastrophically wrong. Of course, I had no reason to suspect at that point what our investigation would ultimately lead to. I've seen some sights in my time, and it takes a lot to impress me, but I have to admit that even today, after more than a century, the ice caves of Simia Orichalcae stand out in my memory as a sight to behold. I don't know what the troopers made of them, but to a born and bred tunnel rat like me, they were quite spectacular. Though broad mining galleries ran off into the distance beyond the reach of our luminators, it was never quite dark, as the ice surrounding us reflected the light back so that it rippled away in a faint blue sheen as far as the eye could see. And the walls glittered, every single irregularity in the surface reflecting and refracting the beams, so we moved through an ever-scintillating constellation of ephemeral stars. Our boots crunched gently on frost-packed floor, and our breath puffed visibly with every exhalation. But down here, away from the flensing wind, I found the temperatures tolerable enough. They were certainly no worse than those in the average Valhallan billet when they could get the air conditioning to work, and I was used to that. It was even warm enough for Jürgen's characteristic odour to have returned, albeit in a slightly muted fashion, for which we were all grateful. I'd requested Lustig's squad for backup, as after our adventures on Gravelax, I was confident in their abilities, and I found the familiar faces and the sergeant's taciturn presence a welcome boost to my spirits. I declined the offer of a guide from among the miners, as I was confident in my own tunnel sense. And if there really were orcs down here, the last thing I wanted was some hysterical civilian getting in the way in the middle of a firefight. The early stages of our descent had been through the bustle of the upper workings, where miners and servitors hurried through broad, well-lit thoroughfares reminiscent of the streets of a Valhallan cavern city, and mobile ore bins full of shimmering ice shoved everything else unceremoniously out of the way. But as we penetrated further into the complex, into the lesser used passages, they grew narrower and less well lit until the only illumination was what we carried with us. From time to time we heard sounds of activity from the main galleries, where Morrell's colleagues were still hacking the precious ice away with the aid of tools which looked alarmingly like the melters we used as weapons. But after an hour or so of steady descent, even this had faded away. "Well, what are we looking for exactly, sir?" Sergeant Lustig asked. I shrugged. "Emperor knows," I said. "Just something unusual." His squad was spread out in a standard search pattern, with everyone in visual range of at least two other troopers. I wasn't going to have any more mysterious disappearances if I could help it, particularly if one of them was likely to be me. The sergeant's broad face creased in a grin. "Well, that narrows it down," he said, glancing around at our surroundings. Coming from an ice world as he did, I suppose he found them bordering on the mundane. In a way, that's what I was counting on. Between the Valhallans' feeling for ice and my hive boy's affinity for enclosed spaces, whatever was down here was bound to have left some traces which would strike one or other of us as odd. "Penlan here," the voice of one of the troopers hissed in my combead, followed a moment later by the attenuated sound of her actual speech overlapping the transmission like a distorted echo. She could only be 100 meters or so away. "I've got something. Looks like tracks." "Hold your position," I ordered, and worked my way towards her silhouette. She was backlit by the luminator she'd taped to the barrel of her lasgun. Jürgen trotted at my heels, his own weapon levelled and ready for use. Experience had taught both of us you could never be too cautious in circumstances like this. "What do you make of it, sir?" Penlan asked, turning towards us. As she did so, she brought the patch of discoloured skin on her left cheek where she'd taken a glancing las hit on Gravelax into the beam of Jürgen's luminator. Her expression was as puzzled as her voice, brown hair falling into her grey eyes from around the rim of her hat. "Damned if I know," I said, not relishing the doubt. She shone her light directly on the marks she'd found, deep gouges in the frozen floor, which indeed looked uncomfortably like claw marks. After more than a decade and a half in Imperial service, during which time I thought I'd encountered pretty much every malevolent life form in the galaxy, I should have been able to recognise them. The fact that I couldn't was deeply disconcerting. Even the mark of orc boots, which I'd been half expecting, would have been preferable. "They look a bit like gene stealer tracks," Jürgen said uncertainly. He was partially right. They'd been gouged out by what looked like powerful talons, but the spacing was all wrong to be the work of a stealer. "Or nids, maybe?" "I don't think so," I said. "The weight distribution's all wrong." Which, given the High Fleet's ability to conjure new and unpleasant creatures out of thin air, wasn't exactly a certainty. But if there was a bio-ship or two in the sector, the chances of them getting this far into Imperial space undetected were negligible. I pointed that out too, and pretended I hadn't seen the momentary flicker of visible relief on Penland's face. The two original regiments, which now made up the 597th, had fought the Tyranids shortly before I joined them, and both had been all but annihilated. Come to that, I'd seen more than enough of the Nids to last me more than a lifetime by this point too. "We'd best press on," I decided after a few moments' reflection. Somehow, the confirmation that there was something down there made it easier to do that than go back, however strong the impulse to retreat I now felt. I knew from experience that an unknown enemy is always a bigger threat than the one you've identified, and in truth, nothing much had changed. I still had a crack squad of veteran troopers between me and anything malevolent lurking up ahead, not to mention Jürgen, whose peculiar gifts had saved my hide on more than one occasion, even though neither of us had been aware of their existence until our encounter with Amberley and her entourage on Gravelax.
1. Very early on in my association with Kane and his aide, it became obvious that Jürgen was a blank, a staggeringly rare attribute which made him immune to demonic possession or psychic attack.
Lustig nodded and gave the order to move on. The mood was, if anything, even more sombre after that. The occasional outbreaks of joking and banter between the troopers sounded hollow now, uncomfortable, and soon petered out into silence, punctuated only by the terse monosyllables of report and response. The trooper on point, Penland still, I think, began communicating by hand signals wherever possible and resorted to the comnet only when absolutely necessary. Almost without thought, we'd slipped into the assumption that we were now in hostile territory. I found that comforting. A healthy dose of paranoia goes with my job, of course, but it was nice to know that everyone else was as jumpy as me for once, with the possible exception of Jürgen, who never seemed particularly put out by anything which didn't involve aerodynamics. Almost without thought, my hands went to my weapons, loosening the chainsword and its scabbard and drawing the las pistol. No point in not being prepared, I thought. "If there's anything down here, we must be right on top of it," Lustig muttered. I nodded. We were only a few dozen metres from the end of the gallery by now, and the dead end I'd spotted on the map. The chances of whatever had left those tracks staying behind to be bottled up by our advance were remote in the extreme, I knew, but still my mouth went dry, my stomach cramping with the anticipation of combat, my imagination running wild with images of rampant chaos spawn. "That's it. Dead end." Penland's voice had an unmistakable edge of relief, which rippled around the rest of the squad like a breeze through summer grass. I exhaled, feeling my muscles relax, unaware until then of how tense I'd become. "Take a look around," I said, starting forward to join her. Jürgen stayed at my shoulder as always, and behind me I heard Lustig issuing orders with his usual calm efficiency. He was deploying the rest of the squad to secure our perimeter. Good. That meant no unpleasant surprises while we were poking around. "Frack all that I can see." Penland moved carefully, sweeping her luminator ahead of her. The beam picked out a blank wall, where the tunnel had simply been abandoned when the seam of refinable material had run out. Then it swept on to pick out a jumble of ice boulders over to the right. The palms of my hands started to tingle, as they always did when my subconscious alerted me to something untoward. Penland started towards the heap of rubble. "Be careful," I started to say, as the realization began to seep through to my forebrain. The tumbled pattern of ice blocks looked familiar, scattered like the debris from an underhive roof fall. I swept my own luminator beam towards the ceiling, where a crack began, no thicker than a hair, before widening to the width of my fist as it reached the wall. From there, the fissure grew exponentially, terminating in the pile of frozen rubble. It still didn't feel right to me. For the debris to have fallen in that pattern, the wall itself must have been undermined. A faint but ominous cracking sound echoed through the chamber. "Penland!" I shouted. "Get back!" But I was too late. She was half turning towards me, an expression of puzzlement on her face, when the floor gave way beneath her and she vanished from sight with a single startled shriek. "Penland!" Lustig started forward until I restrained him with an arm across the chest. There was no knowing how far the treacherous deadfall extended. "Penland, report!" Static hissed in our combeads. "Watch that first step, Sarge." Her voice sounded winded, but if she could crack jokes, she couldn't be that badly hurt. "It's steeper than it looks." "Better move carefully," I counseled the sergeant. "No telling how unstable the rest of the floor is." I inched forward cautiously, Jürgen at my side, just enough to shine the beam from our luminators down into the hole. It seemed sufficiently solid. From here, I could see that a thin crust of ice had formed across the gap where the roof fall had breached the ceiling of a chamber below us. A chamber, I suddenly realised, which didn't appear anywhere on that map. "That froze over recently," Jürgen said, with the certainty of an ice worlder. I edged a little closer to the hole from where I could see Penland. She'd fallen about 5 or 6 metres, but most of that, thank the Emperor, had been down a steep slope rather than a sheer drop. A friction-gouged channel in the ice showed where she'd slid most of the way. Seeing my face appear in the gap, she waved. "Sorry about that, sir," she said. "My foot slipped." "So I see." I got Jürgen to direct his luminator around the chamber she was in. It was roughly circular, no more than a few metres wide, and I began to suspect that it might have been a natural ice pocket. It was easy to imagine a solitary miner falling the way Penland had and being less lucky about landing. The gap they'd left behind them could have frozen over before the search party had arrived. Perhaps Morrell's mysterious disappearances had been accidents after all. "Does that hollow look natural to you?" "Maybe." Penland shone her own beam around, then stiffened, aiming the las gun.
There's another tunnel here. I can't tell how far it goes.
Sit tight. Lustig appeared at my elbow, a coil of climbing rope in his hands. He began looping it round himself and threw the end down to Penland. She grabbed it, slung her las gun, and began to swarm up the rope. After a second, she hesitated.
Sarge, there's something down here. I can hear movement.
After a second or so, I heard it too. The scrape of claw against ice, moving fast, and the loud panting of a predator which has caught a fresh scent. I joined Lustig, grabbing the rope, and hauled until the muscles in my back cracked.
Get her up!
I shouted. Jürgen ran to help too, and between us we dragged Penland a good 3 metres up the ice face. From there, her boot soles caught some purchase, and she was able to scramble her way up the wall. I dropped to my knees, feeling the cold bite through the fabric of my trousers, and extended a hand down into the darkness.
Grab it!
Penland did so, a firm grip clamping round my wrist, and I tightened my grip on hers. We'd nearly made it, when something seized the dangling rope below her and jerked it hard. Frack! Lustig and Jürgen dropped suddenly, pulled off balance, and Penland's weight dragged me down. For a moment I thought we'd make it, but the ice beneath me had too little traction, and for a long, agonised moment I felt myself slipping. My hand tightened reflexively around her wrist, instead of letting go, which would have been far more sensible, and before I knew it I was plunging forwards into the shadowy pit. I landed hard, the breath driven from my lungs, a dozen small pains flaring across my body where I'd bounced on the way down. Penland groaned beside me, face down and winded. Just as well, a small analytical part of my mind told me, or the slung lasgun might have broken her back.
Commissar!
Bright light shone down on us, the illuminator taped to Jürgen's lasgun, and I heard the distant echo of running feet as the rest of the squad responded to our plight. They wouldn't be quick enough, I thought, as the creature, whatever it was, rushed out of the darkness. I had a brief, panic-stricken image of claws and jaws too large and terrifying to be real, and as I scrabbled frantically backwards, my hand fell against the lasgun on Penland's back. Without thinking, I twisted it round, finding just enough play in the sling, and fired without even aiming properly. Either luck or the Emperor was with me, because she'd left it on full auto. As my panic-spasmed hand locked on the trigger, a hail of lasbolts sprayed the chamber, blowing chunks of ice from the walls and deafening us with the roar of ionizing air and ice flashing into steam. The creature screamed and fled, even more terrified than I was, and as the power cell died and relative silence descended on our ringing ears, Penland stirred.
"I've got to stop doing that. I'd appreciate it," I agreed.
A degree of understanding returned to her eyes.
"What happened?"
"The commissar saved your hide," Lustig said. I was suddenly aware of the ring of faces around the hole over our heads. No point mentioning that it was purely by accident, of course, so I made a show of mild embarrassment and patted the frost from my greatcoat.
"Better get the medic to check you over,"
I said, just to reinforce my caring image. I took a glance around the chamber. It looked bigger from down here, and the hail of lasbolts had melted a number of small pits into the walls. Something seemed to be embedded in one, and I tried to focus on it to stop my head spinning. Then my brain finally interpreted what I was seeing, and I regretted my curiosity at once.
"Looks like we've found our missing miner," Penland said, with what I felt was rather unseemly relish.
"Almost," I agreed. It was a human hand, severed at the wrist, the stump scored with vicious bite marks.
"What was that thing?" Jürgen asked, his habitual phlegmatic tone a welcome, calming influence.
"I haven't a clue," I admitted, scooping my las pistol up from the floor where it had fallen. As I did so, I noticed a thick smear of ichor on the ice. The sight cheered me remarkably, not least because if I'd managed to wound the creature, it was unlikely to come back for a while. "But it bleeds." I thrust the sidearm back into the holster on my belt with a sense of grim satisfaction.
"And if it bleeds, we can kill it."